on pension reform and just about everything else as the Speaker of the Illinois House of Representatives, Representative Michael Madigan. Chicago, good to have you back on the show.
Good afternoon. Nice of you to be here.
Good to be here. This afternoon, the governor has laid out his spending proposal for fiscal year 2014. He says it is the most difficult budget he's had to put together, but it'll only get worse if you and the rest of the legislature don't come up with pension reform.
I think the governor did a very good job in his presentation today. He issued a very strong challenge to the legislature. My expectation is that the legislature will be up to the challenge. So we've discussed and debated the need for changes in the Illinois pension systems for several years. I think the time has arrived where we start voting on these questions, which we've already done in the House. So you may recall in the governor's speech, he made a point of saying it's time to vote. Well, we voted last week. We're going to vote this week in the House on pension changes. The time has come.
I want to ask you about some of those amendments that were run last week. Some writers have described them as so painful and radioactive that hardly anyone could vote for them. What was your thinking in putting those out on the floor, Mr. Speaker?
To better educate the members of the House and the Senate if they're watching what we're doing, because my sense of the attitude of the members of the legislature is that they're not yet ready to take this difficult step. And so by presenting these proposals on the floor with this requirement that people vote, will help them better understand how grave the situation is, the difficulty of the proposed changes. And so we'll continue that process over the next several weeks.
There were hardly any Democratic votes for those amendments and no Republican votes. The Republicans said this is a charade. They want to put us on some unpopular bills that they'll use in those mailers come 2014.
Well, the Republicans, I think, made a mistake. So they're elected, and their electors tell them to come here to vote. They don't tell them to come here and not participate. So on two occasions, one last week, one this week, House Republicans have chosen not to participate in debate, not to participate in voting. They weren't elected to not participate. They were elected to participate and to cast some votes.
You were pretty blunt when at the beginning of this session you told the new members that they are going to have to cast some of the most difficult votes of their political lifetimes because they're going to have to break promises to people.
It's all true. So there were promises made to people in the public pension systems. Unfortunately, the fiscal condition of those pension systems today is such that in short order, they won't be able to make payments to anybody. So they need to be reformed. They need to be changed. You need to relook at the financial structure of those systems, make much-needed changes, which will save the system, save the ability of the systems to make payments.
Can you give us a sense of what the amendment's tone will be tomorrow? What's the content of what will be out on the House floor?
Well, for one, we're going to offer an amendment that would put a cap on the amount of money that could be paid in for a pension, which at the same time puts a cap on the amount of a pension payment can be taken by one individual. It's an easy reform. It ought to be adopted. I hope Republicans participate tomorrow. I know we're working with all the Democrats to get a yes vote for the amendment. It's a generally agreed amendment in all of these discussions. So my hope is that tomorrow we can take a good step forward.
Your point person on pensions in the House, Elaine Neckberts, has done a lot of heavy lifting over the past year on this. She and Leader Cross have come up with a plan that some folks feel is a little more saleable or, if you will, passable. Your thoughts on the Neckberts-Cross proposal?
Well, I think a lot of good work went into developing that plan. And there's a lot of good ideas in that plan. I take issue with the end of the plan, the last part of the plan, which is called a hybrid pension system for people not yet hired. And you see, for Mr. Cross, that would be his position on the end of the free lunch for the local employers. So I've spoken at length that 75% of the Illinois pension problem relates to local employers not making their pension payments, where those payments are picked up by the state of Illinois. That's a free lunch. It ought to be eliminated.
And when you're talking about those local employers, you're talking about school districts?
Local school districts, public universities, and community colleges. All of the people in those systems have the pension payment paid for by the state. They ought to be paid for by the local employer, the people that issues the paycheck. It's a free lunch. It ought to end. And we we ought to respond to the governor's challenge and do something significant, not something insignificant.
So at the end of the day, when people are looking for what Speaker Madigan wants to see in this proposal, the cost shift has got to be a piece of that puzzle?
I'm not saying it has to be part of the Neckrich Cross bill. I'm simply saying that if you wish to significantly reform Illinois pensions, you cannot continue with a situation where one government makes a spending decision and another government makes the payment. That doesn't work. That's fiscally irresponsible.
There's also a double whammy for the citizens of Chicago because they're paying both.
And in the case of Chicago, the Chicago public school system from the very beginning has made the pension payment for all of its employees, including the teachers. You go across the city boundary to another local school district, they make the payment for the janitor, but they don't make the payment for the teacher. It's a free lunch. It's got to end.
The We Are One coalition of labor, organized labor, invited you and the other leaders to a summit on pension reform a few weeks ago, and you made it scorchingly clear you weren't going to be a part of that.
Well, that coalition was formed last spring. I met 8 times with that particular coalition, which is a group of labor unions. And last spring, they were of no help in what we were trying to do. They were simply obstructionists. And so now they come forward and they say, well, they're going to convene a forum, and we can go to their forum to come up with ideas for change. We have all of the ideas right here in the Capitol building. All we need to do is to take some tough votes and get them enacted.
Organized labor, though, has always been one of the traditional allies of the Democratic Party.
And they still are.
Are you running a risk, though, for some of your members next election cycle by alienating them?
Mike Madigan is not going to alienate labor unions. He may alienate one or two labor unions, but not all of them. So put that fear to rest. Organized labor will be supporting Democrats in the next general election.
One of the other ideas that came up here recently came from one of your leadership team, Representative Lou Lang of Skokie, about making the income tax permanent and using that as the revenue stream for pension payments in the future.
Yeah, I think we ought to take all of the ideas that have been offered on pension changes and take them under consideration. Lou came up with a good idea. We'll take it under consideration, but we have to work toward passing a bill.
What about that income tax? It sunsets in 2015. A lot of folks who are watching the governor's budget proposal as it rolls out today are saying this budget proposal basically sets the stage for that income tax being made permanent to keep things going.
We have to wait until we get to the point where we'll be called upon to decide whether to extend the tax or not extend the tax. I think it's just very early to be forcing that decision.
As you watch the federal budget debacle and meltdown here in the last few weeks, are you concerned about what sequestration may do to the budget that we're looking at here?
Very interesting, because the people in the United States Congress have not been able to do what we've done here in Illinois. For the last 2 years, the budget making initiated in the House. In the House, we adopted a resolution which set a spending cap for the budget making. We did not go over the cap. Consequently, for the last 2 years, initiating in the House, we've adopted reduction budgets. The Congress has not been able to do that. They would be well served if they would study what we've done here in Illinois, follow our example, and get about the business of simply reducing spending at the federal level, if that's what they wish to do.
The House Revenue and Commerce Committee yesterday, not coincidentally, I'm sure, came up with that revenue cap for fiscal year 2014, and they're looking at just over $35 billion. The governor's budget as proposed, Mr. Speaker, is around $500 million more than that.
It's a good example of where the budget making will initiate in the House of Representatives. Now, we spent several weeks working with the Republicans to establish a spending cap. The resolution that was adopted yesterday was supported by 2/3 of the Republicans and every Democrat. That's the cap that we're going to work with. We're not going to go over that cap. There will be a difference with the governor, but it's not the end of the budget making. We'll continue to work with the governor, even though we'll have some differences with him.
That new contract that is in the process of being voted upon by members of AFSCME, the large state workers union. The governor says that the savings from putting the health insurance premiums on the retirees will reap something like $900 million in savings over the course of that contract for 3 years. But what about the COLAs, the raises, and everything else?
There'll be some offsets, and under the governor's proposal, after the offsets, there'll be savings to the state that can be used in this stuff budget making or used to pay old bills. So we're very hopeful that all of the representations coming out of the negotiations between the governor and the AFSCME prove to be true.
So will the money be there to fund those raises, those back raises?
That's a good question. And so that question, whether we will fund these raises proposed in the contract, will be taken with the budget making functioning under a spending cap established by the House of Representatives. And so my expectation is that the budget makers in the House and in the Senate will instruct the state agencies, you get X amount of appropriation, now you work through that amount of money and decide whether you want to do pay raises or lay off workers.
There was something else that the administration is looking at, and it comes to what are called the fund transfers out. Those are upwards of $2 billion in what I believe they characterize as almost automatic fund transfers. He says, according to a Senate study, you might have upwards of $2 billion that you might, if there's statutory approval given, that you might be able to tap into some of that.
Well, we could tap into them. Please understand that 50% of that money is what's called local government distributive money, money that goes to local governments like the city of Chicago. 25% of the money is for transit districts like the RTA, downstate transit districts, and then 25% would be other purposes.
So I can imagine what the parade of local mayors and county board officials would be to the doorways of your members and the Republicans.
This happened over the last 2 years, where there was discussion about taking money away from local governments for state purposes.
There's a possibility that there may be a new gaming bill originating in the Senate this week. I'm told that the bill would answer all seven of the governor's objections that he raised in the veto message. You've studied gaming extensively, particularly under the Blagojevich years. How would the bill be received in the House?
I'm not certain how it will be received in the House because I'm not sure of the details of the bill. Those that wish to expand gaming have come pretty close in recent years. They did get a bill to the governor the last time. Governor vetoed the bill. There seems to be more cooperation now among all of the participants to the issue, so the chances might be pretty good that there could be a gaming bill.
I understand that you've been monitoring as well the crafting of a compromise on horizontal fracturing, the fracking bill, because Illinois has huge amounts of natural gas and oil that could be tapped with this technology, but it's very problematic technology unless you've got strong regulations in place. A bill is making its way out now to the floor, to the House.
There's a bill under discussion and under negotiation. I've been advised that today that bill would have very strong regulations and restrictions on fracking, such to protect the environment. The open question would be the extraction tax that would be imposed and the purpose for which that tax would be used.
Do you have a figure in mind? I've heard that 12% might be one figure that could be entertained.
I'm sure it could be entertained, and 1% could be entertained,
I'm
and
sure.
0 could be entertained. There's another issue here, yeah. Which is that there are certain people in the legislature who would prefer to do a moratorium on fracking.
You're right.
There are instances all across the country where fracking has been destructive of the environment, especially in Pennsylvania and in Texas. So there's a strong body of people here in the Illinois legislature that would prefer just to say, let's do a moratorium, let's not do this.
If fracking does come about, would those dollars be geared toward a specific part of the Illinois budget, like capital?
That's to be decided.
Gun control is obviously a huge issue for the entire state. You have the appeals court ruling on concealed carry. If nothing is done by, I believe, May or June, it's Katie Byer the door. Anything is out there. But it's one of the most contentious issues in the Capitol.
I was on the floor during the debate, so I witnessed it. It's very contentious. The difficulty in responding to the court is that a big participant in this discussion and debate is the Illinois Rifle Association, which has made public statements that they'd be just fine with no bill. They would be just fine under the court order. And the leader of their group was quoted as saying that you could now walk down Michigan Avenue with an assault weapon in your hand. That's the difficulty. I think that the majority of people in the legislature are committed to responding to the court order. But the Rifle Association will be a necessary party to these discussions, these negotiations, and they come into these discussions with a real bad attitude.
No question. As we come, one of the toughest ones we're going to face this year, as we come to the end of the program, Governor Quinn announced very very sincerely the passing of former state senator and controller Don Clark Netsch. You go back a long way with Don Clark Netsch.
To the Constitutional Convention of 1969 and 1970, where she played a very instrumental role, drawing upon her experience in the Kerner administration, where she had served as an administrative assistant to Governor Otto Kerner.
Yes.
And she was able to give to the convention the executive perspective on how state government functions and operates.
And from then on out, she was such a trailblazer in so many ways, a significant legacy for Illinois.
We're all very sad with her passing.
Speaker Madigan, thanks very much for your time.